Is an invisible enemy inviting totalitarianism?
Well, what TSA was to the post-9/11 era, contact tracing is to the COVID era. It's all for our own good and protection. That's what they say.
Welcome to Understanding the Times Radio with Jen Markell, Radio for the Remnant, brought to you by Olive Tree Ministries. How did Big Brother enter the picture when the world is fighting an invisible enemy and not a military might? The coronavirus has caught entire nations off guard. Rules and laws are being implemented that involve government overreach, and that always brings about a dilemma for the Christian. Here is today's programming.
We're here because we feel as though the American people have not heard from all the expertise that's out there all across our country. We do have some experts speaking, but there's lots and lots of experts across the country. So some of us decided to get together. We're America's frontline doctors. We're here only to help American patients and the American nation heal. We have a lot of information to share. Americans are riveted and captured by fear at the moment. We are not held down by the virus as much as we're being held down by the spider web of fear. That spider web is all around us, and it's constricting us, and it's draining the lifeblood of the American people, American society, and American economy. This does not make sense. COVID-19 is a virus that exists in essentially two phases. There's the early phase disease and there's the late phase disease. In the early phase, either before you get the virus or early when you've gotten the virus, if you've gotten the virus, there's treatment. That's what we're here to tell you. We're going to talk about that this afternoon. You can find it on America's Frontline Doctors. There's many other sites that are streaming it live on Facebook. But we implore you to hear this because this message has been silenced. There are many thousands of physicians who have been silenced from telling the American people the good news about the situation, that we can manage the virus carefully and intelligently, but we cannot live with this spider web of fear that's constricting our country. So we're going to hear now from various physicians. Some are going to talk to you about what the lockdown has done to young, to older, to businesses, to the economy, and how we can get ourselves out of the cycle of fear.
Welcome to the program. Always glad you can join me. That was a little clip from America's Frontline Doctors on steps of the Supreme Court. We'll get into why I played that in just a few minutes, because the world has been in a fear mindset since March of 2020 due to an invisible enemy, a virus. And I've shared various aspects of this ordeal now on this program for 4 months. One of those troubling aspects to the battle with COVID-19, I think, is the growing loss of privacy, of government intrusion into our lives, and even worsening scenario with that, thanks to one aspect of it called contact tracing, and the fact that COVID-19 is morphing into COVID-1984, the Orwellian invasion into personal liberties. My guest for the hour to discuss this is Twyla Brace. She's co-founder of Citizens Council for Health Freedom, headquartered in St. Paul, Minnesota. So she's a neighbor of mine. I'm in Minneapolis, the late great Twin Cities, since terrible things have happened here in the last few months. And she's been listed in the lineup of the 100 most powerful people in healthcare here in the last decade or so. And she's author of the book Big Brother in the Exam Room, The Dangerous Truth About Electronic Health Records. And Twyla heard in her one-minute spots on about 850 radio stations. So many of you listening to this program, since we air on some same networks, are very familiar with Twyla Brace. Twyla, welcome into the studio for the first time. Nice to have you.
Thank you so much, Jan.
So I've appreciated your ministry over the years. We'll say more about your book as we move into the programming. It seems more recently, Twyla, at least in the last month or so, there's been what appears to be almost round two going on, a spike in cases. Some states that seem safe, Florida, for instance, now terrible conditions going on down there. You say this might be due to probable cases that are being counted as confirmed cases. And you say not all states will do this, but probable is overly broad, and that we should ultimately be looking at hospitalizations going down and deaths going down. But talk to us a little bit about the spike that has gone on here now in late June, July.
So there is a spike of cases, as you said, it's very important to understand or define the word case. Some states are doing probable cases, and there are 15 different ways you can become a probable case. But in no case of those 15 ways does it have to be a confirmed case of COVID-19. The spikes are probably for several reasons. One, more and more people are getting together. Two, there's more and more testing and people are being tested. But I think what I'd like to do is just direct your listeners' attention away from cases, because at the end of the day, if we're looking for herd immunity, which I call community immunity, we should expect and actually look forward to there being more cases. Because what we're looking at is the majority of the cases are people who are asymptomatic, they've never had a symptom, or they're mildly symptomatic, in which case they thought they just had the sniffles. They might even be moderately symptomatic, but it wasn't even enough to keep them home or kept them home for some days. There are other people who have more of a case, and there are certainly the severe cases in the hospital. The virus is very difficult to stop, and I think that is where the goalposts have been moved. When they said to flatten the curve, they took the same amount of people, whatever that amount was, that was going to be infected, and said, we're just going to slow the spread. They didn't say we're going to stop the virus. They didn't say we're going to escape the virus. It was never about that, because the virus is very small. It's very contagious. It would be like trying to stop the seasonal flu.
An article I picked offline here with American Family Association, and I work closely with them, so I respect their research and their reporting. COVID numbers, who can you trust? It's an interview of you. It says, quoting you, and then when it comes to numbers, including involving COVID-19, some of that information may involve people who have tested positive for the coronavirus, as well as those who are considered probable cases. In other words, people are claiming symptoms that health officials believe indicate COVID-19. And they again turn to you. Twyla Braze, a registered nurse and president of Citizens Council for Health Freedom, acknowledges that while some people might find it very scary when the case numbers suddenly shoot up, in fact, the majority of those are probable cases which have never been confirmed to be COVID. And then you say the definition of probable cases is so loose that somebody simply has to live in an area that has a lot of COVID-19, plus they have a headache and they have a fever, or at least they think they have a fever and they don't have to measure it. And by that, they become a probable case and can be reported as a case of COVID-19, which of course they are not. So I found that extremely interesting.
I will say that there's about half of the states that refuse to do that. So they refuse to report probable cases. In the states that do report probable cases, if indeed, as the Texas commissioner said, that would mean a 17-fold increase in cases, that's possible in those states. A lot of the more recent cases would be probable rather than confirmed.
Okay.
I think nobody actually knows. And that's why one of the commissioners said, so we can't really count on or trust the deaths because they're now doing probable deaths without actual confirmed disease. She said, really, what we need to do is look at the hospitalizations. And around the country, the deaths and the hospitalizations are going down nationwide.
I want to move on to a different issue, and that would be the contact tracing, because COVID-19, some are calling it COVID-1984. Just because of Big Brother intrusion, totalitarian thinking by certainly some governors and mayors. I have a clip or two to play to back some of that up. But I think what I'd like to do is I'd like to play a real short clip here. It happens to be Laura Ingraham. She is commenting on the death of privacy. She's relating it to the contact tracing. She's explaining what it is and how our rights are. Boy, if we thought they were violated after 9/11, you probably haven't seen anything yet.
Now, earlier today, a good friend of mine and I were talking about how surprising it was that so many Americans were willing to give up their inalienable rights for a government promise of safety. Basic liberties, the right to work, to travel, to worship, free speech, the right to attend school, to petition the government, to assemble with others. They all were completely sidelined or partially sidelined during the COVID-19 shutdowns. Officials assured us that restrictions would be short-lived and only be in place until we flatten the curve. But even after we did that, and hospitals thankfully were not overrun, blue state governors began piling on new conditions in order for states to be fully reopened again. They had complicated requirements in a New York 51-page reopening document. Michigan, then Illinois and Washington State, they seem hell-bent on keeping people immobile and scared as long as possible. And now they found a new excuse for delay: the need for hundreds of thousands of so-called contact tracers.
The point of this is to create a core of trained folks who are ready and able, have the skills we need them to have to help usher us all through the new environment.
I know a lot of you don't answer the phone when you see an unknown caller reaching in, but I implore you to answer that call.
We want to grow our voluntary contact tracing so that we can further control and reduce the rate of spread of COVID-19 and stop outbreaks in their tracks.
Yeah, I trust him. Well, what TSA was to the post-9/11 era, contact tracing is to the COVID era. It's all for our own good and protection. That's what they say. And it seems fine at first, until maybe when you're talking about TSA, an agent's hand gets a little too close to your private parts during a random screening. And then they throw away your favorite moisturizer, right? Because it's too many ounces. But at least your interaction with a TSA agent is brief and limited to only when you fly. Your interaction with a COVID tracer could last for weeks, if not longer. According to the AP, the practice of so-called contact tracing requires a hybrid job of interrogator, therapist, and nurse as they try to coax nervous people to be honest. The goal? To create a roadmap of everywhere infected people have been and who they've been around. That's a heavy lift. So how many of these tracers will we actually need?
Health investigator Mackenzie Bray follows a script that she knows all too well.
I'm just following up on your COVID-19 test results.
Bray is among an army of health professionals and volunteers working as contact tracers. Some health officials estimate that as many as 300,000 contact tracers would be needed in the country to effectively mitigate the spread.
Are you kidding me? 300,000? So, remember I talked about how this kind of reminds me of the TSA, the creation of the TSA. Well, if the, quote, experts get their way, there will be six times more contact tracers than TSA agents. But instead of rummaging through your luggage, these contact tracers will be prying into the most intimate details of your life.
Well, Abrace, you even have a paper on the contact tracing. I have it in front of me. You say at its core, contact tracing is the government collecting data on everyone's friends, family, associates, colleagues. This is some of the most intimate personal data we have, and you have a whole paper on it here. Talk to me about this. I mean, is this troubling you as much as it is me? I think so.
Yes, contact tracing, and I love how Laura said it, COVID tracing, right? That's a very good way to say it. But what the COVID tracing is doing is they want to find all your contacts. Mm-hmm. Now, if we think of how this could go, we can look no further than South Korea. I think it would be really good for your listeners to hear what they do in South Korea. If we were to become like South Korea and you got a diagnosis of COVID-19, well, immediately the police would come and they would confiscate your phone. And then they would look into it to find out the last 5 days of contacts. Then they would go to the National Bank Authority and they would find out where you had spent your money so that they would know everywhere that you had gone. And then finally they would take your photograph and they would put it through their national surveillance system to see everyone and everywhere you had been and everyone that you were in contact with. And that would be how they would find out what you had done and whom you were with. Now, a lot of people listening to this may not be thinking about what this really could mean. All of your contacts. So there are people who have contacts that they don't want anybody to know about. And then there are just your family and friends connections, which suddenly become part of a government record. Everybody that you have seen within a certain period of time, you're supposed to tell who it is, how long you think that you were with that person, what's the contact information for that person. And then they're going to go to your friends and your colleagues and everybody whose names you gave them. And they're going to go through the very same thing with them. All along this chain, because of the government, you can be put under essentially house arrest. And you can be forced to stay at your home and be monitored every day by the government, or even be put into ankle monitors as a Kentucky couple was.
That's right.
Right? This is what can happen. This is why a lot of people don't want to provide this kind of information to the government, because they don't know when the police power will come.
Well, it is voluntary.
That's right.
I'm very, very pleased to know that it's voluntary, at least right now. Could that change? Maybe it could change. I don't know. You say Americans need to know they do not have to answer or respond to a contact tracer. You say they have the right to refuse, but people also need to know that some state government agencies can charge you with a crime and forcibly quarantine you if you refuse. And then the article goes on, already many Americans nationwide are refusing to participate in contact tracing because they don't want to share their information or they don't trust public health officials with maintaining their privacy. How long is this voluntary?
The thing is that so far, to my knowledge, contact tracing, refusal to participate in contact tracing will not get you charged with a crime. Refusal to participate in, and I could be wrong because I haven't looked at every state law, but refusal to participate in examination, vaccination, testing,
yes,
all of that in some states indeed could get you a misdemeanor. Contact tracing is kind of new, and so it kind of depends on what your state law says as to whether or not you could be charged.
I find this one of the more troubling aspects of everything we're going through as a country. For that matter, as you indicated, globally, the contact tracing. So we'll see where that's going to go. Folks, if you just joined me, you're listening to Understanding the Times Radio, Jan Markell. And I have in the studio Twyla Brace, and many of you know Twyla. She's also got a book out. We need to reference that, Big Brother in the Exam Room, The Dangerous Truth About Electronic Health Records. Best place to get this, Twyla, is where?
Anywhere books are sold,
okay,
but they can go to bigbrotherintheexamroom.com to,
okay,
buy it directly from us. Bigbrotherintheexamroom.com.
To get a hold of Twyla and to learn a lot more, and again, she heads the Citizens Council for Health Freedom, CCHfreedom.org, CCHfreedom.org. We're probably going to give several websites throughout the programming, folks, so be patient with us. If you can write them down, that's helpful. I opened the whole program playing a clip from the doctors on the steps of the Supreme Court talking about the fear factor. And you and I talked about this privately. I mean, fear is gripping America. Fear is gripping the world. Some of that the media has instilled in people. The sky is falling. We supposedly have a spike here in midsummer, whether or not it's an actual spike and we get back to probable cases. The details may not be a spike, but I think there is probably something going on this summer. There's some sort of a fear that's been instilled in people, and I think some of that is driven by concerns about a forthcoming vaccine. And is the vaccine going to be voluntary? Is it going to be forced on people? I think it can be forced on people. I want to just play one more clip here in this segment, because this is Alan Dershowitz. And he's a respected attorney. He's been a professor at Harvard for years and years. Now he's professor emeritus. He's made a statement here. Let's just play this clip. We'll come back and talk about it.
Let me put it very clearly. You have no constitutional right to endanger the public and spread a disease, even if you disagree. You have no right not to be vaccinated. You have no right not to wear a mask. You have no right to open up your business.
Wait, can I stop you? No right not to be vaccinated, meaning if they decide you have to be vaccinated, we have to be vaccinated?
Absolutely. And if you refuse to be vaccinated, the state has the power to literally take you to a doctor's office and plunge a needle into your arm. If the vaccination,
where is that in the Constitution?
If the vaccination is designed to prevent the spreading disease.
Okay, Twyla, that is about a month-old clip. I've referred to it a couple times on this program. It's a terrifying clip. Government has the right to drag you into a doctor's office, plunge a needle into your arm. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, my thoughts on this are you can see where everybody is going. There's a lot of frustration on the left in particular, mm-hmm, that there are parents everywhere around the country getting more and more and more worried about vaccinations. The other side is trying to get the personal exemptions gone. California is making themselves the arbiter of what is a medical exemption, right? So there's this entire drive to take parents out of the driver's seat, mm-hmm, and put the government in the driver's seat. And so now with COVID, I think they see an opportunity to say that the government gets to force you to do these things that you don't want to. But this is patently wrong. There's all sorts of vaccinations out there that don't work for people. And you just have a right not to have something forced into your body. Whenever they talk about that, they never talk about the fact that there is a vaccine injury court, right?
Okay.
To deal with the people who have the injuries that come from vaccination. And even Dr. Fauci, when he testified before the Senate, and you have to realize that he swore to tell the whole truth, right? So he said, even if we get a vaccine, there's no guarantee it would work. And then the second thing that he said should be alarming to people. Nobody's really talking about it. And that is that he said it might backfire.
Okay.
And by backfire, that means that if you have had the vaccine, when the virus comes and attacks you, it may become more virulent by virtue of having already had the vaccine. That is likely to happen to some people already today with the seasonal flu. They get the vaccine and then they get the flu and it's just awful for them, right? So I think that's important to understand. And we must not let the government ever take this position. And my fear is that the mask mandate is conditioning
and
us
I'm going
to
there.
Agree to
right.
do whatever the government says that we must do and as a result of fear.
You said to me, masks set a precedent for a vaccine, and I'm going there. We're going to get there probably as soon as we get to my next segment and maybe even before. That was a very interesting statement you made to me. Masks are going to set the precedent for a vaccine. That's a very scary thought. We have mask mania right now. I've never seen anything like it. People are being hollered at and driven out of businesses. And I want to get into the fact of how ineffective a mask is, but nonetheless, it's gone into the people's heads. We have to have a mask. Therefore, is that going to transfer? Well, we have to have a vaccine.
Right. I think that that's the whole thing. It doesn't necessarily transfer as we've got to have a mask, we've got to have a vaccine. What transfers is that the government said we have to put a piece of fabric between our entire breathing apparatus and the air that we need and cover up our face and make it more difficult for us to speak and communicate with each other. And if you've accepted that the government can do that, then you have accepted that the government can force you to take a vaccine. Because they're saying you're doing it to protect others. You're not doing it to protect yourself. And that's exactly the argument with the vaccinations, is you're doing it to protect others. Yourself too, but they'll say it for others because you're responsible to protect others will be their rationale.
I want to hit one more topic in this segment, and then in my second segment, we'll look more at the mask issue and some other issues as well. Threats to children. We talked about this in America. As of today, less than 20 have died. I think it's 14 or 15 children have died. They would probably have an underlying condition because this really is not a threat to children. My hunch is you're all for opening the schools. Am I right?
That's correct. Yes. Yeah. It is good to reopen the schools for so many reasons. To address the thing that you said about, yes, there's very few children that have died. In my estimation, I'm not sure whether they have died from COVID or with COVID. And that's a very important distinction. Is it the COVID-19 that was the reason that they died? Or did they die for another reason and just happen to have COVID-19 as an infection that maybe it was even asymptomatic for them? I think that that's very important. And studies have found that children do not get this virus very often, unlike H1N1 that was really targeted towards children. But they also don't transmit it to others very readily either.
22 European nations have opened their schools. Apparently, they're relaxing when it comes to kids getting this. The children apparently have some immune systems that are far better than adults to fight this. 166 have died from the flu. 14 or 15 in America have died of COVID.
And nobody talks about that. Like, that's a wonderful statistic, the difference between that, right? Are we stopping everything for children? Have we shut down the schools in order to keep children from getting the flu? We have not.
Where do you see it going then, the school situation? Let's leave it to the United States here.
Well, I think it might depend on the state that you're in. Okay. Some states, it's very clear that the governor is trying to shut it down for the entire year. The teachers' unions are out there saying we got to shut down the school for the year. They don't want to die from COVID-19, and so they're not getting really the truth. And so I think it will really depend, but look at the children. There are other things here that the children are dealing with. They're dealing with a fear imposed upon them by the government when they're not even the ones who are going to get this, and they're dealing with loss of their friends. They're dealing with certain domestic issues, abuse, or whether it's the husband and the wife who are abusing each other and they're having to watch it. There's all sorts of things. They don't have the freedom that they had before. They're growing up in this very constrained thing and living under this mantle of fear that they don't have to live under because even their parents are not likely to get it. And most of their teachers aren't likely to get it. It's really everybody over 65 And if you've got obesity, diabetes, cardiovascular diseases, kidney diseases, you're the ones who are the susceptible ones. Everyone else is not in the susceptible category.
Twyla Brace heads the Citizens Council for Health Freedom. You can learn a lot more and keep up to date with her articles, her Facebook Live updates, and more video, cchfreedom.org, cchfreedom.org. Now, here's where I still want to go with the time that we have left, because we have some topics yet that I want to hit on. Twyla said to me, she feels the goal of much of this is that we are going to be wanting single-payer health care. Well, how long have we heard about that? Probably the last 10 years. We're going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to get into the mask madness. She calls the mask situation medical menace, and they offer a false sense of security. We'll talk about that a little bit in my second segment. We're going to talk about, we've been watching some power-hungry people here for a long time here, for several months. What's behind that? What I have observed is that people are willing to give up a lot when it comes to their health and their safety. I mean, who wants to be sick? We'll give up just about anything to stay well. Well, that has consequences. We'll talk about that and much, much more in part two of the programming, so don't go away. I'm coming back in a couple of minutes.
We love friendly feedback. Contact us through our website, olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org. You can call us Central Time at 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. We get our mail when you write to Olive Tree Ministries and Jan Markell, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. That's Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. All gifts are tax deductible. In an age of fake news and false teaching, thank you for trusting Understanding the Times Radio. Many today feel helpless as they see America, once called a shining city on a hill, becoming weakened and attacked from within and without. People ask in near despair, what can I do to turn the tide? How can I intervene on behalf of the greatest nation on earth? That is why this ministry is carrying Dr. Robert Jeffress' new book, Praying for America, 40 Inspiring Stories and Prayers for Our Nation. The most patriotic thing you can do for America is pray. In times of division and disaster, our country has a long history of turning to God. Each chapter of this uplifting book includes an inspiring story demonstrating the power of faith in the life of our nation. A prayer and a relevant passage of Scripture to inspire and encourage you in praying intently for our country in these increasingly divided times. Praying for America will serve as a very necessary and timely reminder that in God we trust. Find the new book in our online store at olivetreeviews.org for just $16 plus $6 shipping and handling in the U.S. Or call our office Monday through Friday at 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. You will also find the book offered in our print magazine. Sign up online at olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org.
In other words, if you accept that the government can, for health and safety, force you into a mask to cover up your personality, to dehumanize you, to take away your ability to speak and breathe freely, then you will have to accept that they can force you into vaccination.
We have appreciated the ministry of Twyla Brace, who is truly looking out for your health freedom in an age of expanding government with socialized medicine the goal of many in Washington. Jan and Twyla wrap up their discussion in this segment. COVID-19 has been a game changer in 2020 as many people operate out of fear and anxiety towards an invisible enemy.
Lightfoot recently announced that anyone who meets privately with friends or even talks about meeting privately with friends on social media will be monitored and could be arrested.
Now, I've directed Superintendent Brown to order all police districts to give special attention to these parties. And this is how it's going to be. We will shut you down. We will cite you. And if we need to, we will arrest you and we will take you to jail. Period. The time for educating people into compliance is over. Don't be stupid. Don't come out. Don't advertise on social media. We're watching you.
Do the people of Chicago take Lori Lightfoot seriously? How did a buffoon like that wind up in the mayor's office? Lori Lightfoot believes she has the power to imprison you if you talk about your weekend plans on Facebook. How did she get the power to do that?
Well, welcome back. We are in a bizarro world. Every day I see headlines that I've never seen in my lifetime. And yeah, some blue state governors and mayors and city council people have gotten drunk on power and they've taken advantage of COVID-19, turned it into COVID-1984, totalitarianism. I'm not kidding. I come from a blue state. My guest for the hour comes from a blue state, Minnesota. We've got kind of a goofy governor here, but it goes way beyond Minnesota issues. Matter of fact, some of our issues are minor compared to what I know folks are going through in the state of California, for instance. So my guest for the hour is Twyla Braith, and she is co-founder of Citizens Council for Health Freedom, headquartered in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm in Minneapolis, and she's been listed in the lineup of the 100 most influential people in healthcare. That happened about a decade ago. She's also an author of a book, Big Brother in the Exam Room, The Dangerous Truth About Electronic Health Records. Hopefully I can say a little bit more about that book as we wind the program down. It's about a 400-page book. It is an encyclopedia of great information. Twyla, let's hit a couple of issues yet while we still have time. I kind of teased in the previous segment that I want to get into the face mask issue. I even said in part one, we talked about masks setting the precedent for a vaccine, and we kind of discussed what we meant by that. Is the vaccine going to become mandatory? We don't know that, but it certainly could. But many states and cities now require a face mask. A lot of them do, including our governor came out recently here in Minnesota. It's kind of changed the way we live, and not in a very good way. You've written a lot on it. You've been interviewed a lot. You've got quite a strong opinion on the masks. You and I talked privately. You call them a medical menace. Why?
Well, they are even more than a medical menace. Well, let's start with the medical menace part about them. And even the World Health Organization,
yes,
which is not my favorite
right.
organization, however, they talk about the fact that the mask itself can be a problem for many reasons. One of the biggest ones is self-contamination. In other words, look at yourselves who are wearing masks and think of how many times you touch your mask. Where do you put your mask? And then do you put it back on your face? So self-contamination and cross-contamination. Are you in the grocery store? Are you touching the cart? And then something happens with your mask and you reach up and touch your mask. Masks are supposed to be washed daily or between uses. Surgeons only wear theirs for an hour before they have to change theirs. And then you're putting them in your pocket. You're laying them on the car seat. You're putting them on the table when you are in the restaurant. Where are those masks going? They are a purveyor of germs. This is one of the things that the World Health Organization talks about, but also the fact that it causes breathing difficulty. Mm-hmm. Now, let's say you have asthma, and so you already have a breathing problem. Now you put on a mask. Now it makes it even worse. And you're probably exempt because you would be considered one of those that it's medically intolerable, and so you wouldn't have to wear a mask. But if you, having asthma, find this medically intolerable, you know that everybody who puts on a mask breathes a little less well. There is that problem with the mask. And then there are skin rashes, and there are all sorts of other things that happen. Difficulty communication. Imagine if you're deaf and you're trying to look at somebody's lips. That happens with people and elderly people and young people and older people talking together. That happens all the time. People are watching each other's lips. So it is a medical menace. Above and beyond that, it doesn't do what they say that it does. Right?
Yeah.
It doesn't do it.
I have an article here. I believe you wrote this, Alpha News. And you say Dr. Michael Osterholm, former interim director of the CDC, top infectious disease expert at the University of Minnesota here. This is him. They don't work. Even Osterholm is saying they don't work.
That's right. He has never seen such a broad mandate without any scientific evidence behind it. there are two researchers out of Chicago who say that our review of relevant studies indicates that cloth masks will be ineffective at preventing SARS-CoV-2, that's the virus, transmission, whether worn as source control. In other words, that means you wear it to prevent another person from getting it, or whether it's worn as PPE, personal protective equipment, right? So it doesn't help either direction. And the one study that looked at cloth masks versus surgical masks found that the surgical masks allowed 44% of particles to penetrate the mask. The cloth mask allowed 97%. Okay. And that's through the material. This is not like an N95 mask, which is fit to everybody's face, because it has all this air going through. So all around the sides, there's 100% leakage. And they're saying that COVID-19 now is being spread in an aerosolized fashion. That's what they're thinking now. So every time you take a breath out and every time you take a breath in, this is all in the air. It's not like it has to be coughed into your face. So it's 100% leakage around the sides, 97% leakage through the mask. So this is just a fallacy that this is protecting anybody.
Going back to Osterholm here, I believe it's the same article. He says, indeed, exhaustive studies done after the 1918 Spanish flu found masks didn't make a difference. And the only study on cloth masks found 97% of particles passed through the fabric. Osterholm says cloth masks may stop large droplets, but it's the little particles coming around the sides that are the real problem. And I think most everybody respects Osterholm. He's been around forever and ever. He's a serious epidemiologist.
The World Health Organization says you can wear masks. They've kind of had some pressure on them, right? And so they're like, we encourage masks when people say masks. But this is what they really say about the evidence. They say there's currently no evidence that wearing a mask, whether medical or other types, by healthy people in the wider community, including universal community masking, can prevent them from infection with respiratory viruses. Mm-hmm. So any respiratory viruses, right? But then they add, including COVID-19. They not only say that, but they say the wide use of masks by healthy people in the community setting is not supported by current evidence and carries uncertainties and critical risks.
And you know, some states are now threatening jail time for people who do not wear masks. And the contorted irony is that the same virus is being used as a pretext to release criminals from jails and prisons to stop the epidemic in a confined area. Well, that's our upside-down Twilight Zone world. There's much more we could say about the mask issue, but I think we've made the point. Again, Twyla, correct me if I'm wrong, but people I find are willing to do almost anything if it will protect their health. They don't want to get sick. Who wants to get sick? I mean, not only you can get sick, but it's a pretty ugly sickness.
Well, that's right. As it was in the New England Journal of Medicine, this one article, these writers said that they know that wearing a mask outside healthcare facilities offers little, if any, protection from infection. And then they add, in many cases, the desire for widespread masking is a reflexive reaction to anxiety over the pandemic. And Dr. Osterholm also says that he says we're making decisions not based on science, but on emotion.
In the meantime, we're all stuck with them.
Yes.
Everywhere.
Unless
you have a medical reason.
Oh, yes. Different laws say different things. So in Minnesota, there is the governor's order, which says that nobody can question you if you say that you have a medical condition. So they can't ask you to bring out your doctor's note. Okay. They can't get you to have proof. It can't be an inquisition as to whether or not you're really qualified to say that you have a medical condition. So there are lots of people who are probably qualified under the medical intolerable label. One of the studies that I found said that it was difficult at a cardiovascular level. And let me see here, because I've got this quote right here. It says that face masks have a marked negative impact on cardiopulmonary capacity that significantly impairs strenuous physical and occupational activities. So if you've got any kind of heart condition, I think you should think about that. You've got any kind of a pulmonary condition, you should think about that. But what I think about is, if this is a problem for somebody with a condition, it's also a problem for somebody without a condition, because no matter what, it is decreasing your ability to breathe free.
I want to play another clip, probably the last one we'll play here. This is State Senator from Minnesota, Scott Jensen. The reason I'm playing him is he has been marginalized, as have others who are trying to tell the truth about COVID-19. He's a doctor who was voted best family doctor some 5 years ago, and now he's come under huge scrutiny, criticism, investigation even. Let's play that clip, and I want to come back and discuss it with you.
Hi, Senator Scott Jensen. I represent Carver County. This is one of the most important videos I've made, and one of the hardest. Frankly, it's been a very difficult decision to make whether I even wanted to do it. Less than a week ago, I was notified by the Board of Medical Practice in Minnesota that I was being investigated because of public statements I had made. They listed two allegations. They said I've been spreading misinformation in regards to the completion of death certificates on a news program, which happened to take place on April 7th. And you could find that one. It was with Chris Berg, if you wanted to. And the other allegation was that I provided reckless advice in my willingness to compare COVID-19 and the flu. When I got this letter, I was ticked. And quite frankly, I leaned into the comfort and wisdom of my family to help them, let them walk me, talk me off the cliff. But doggone it, if this can happen to me, my view is it could happen to anybody. I've been a family doc for 40 years. I work hard, I love my patients, I do house calls, I've been medical directors, I've held staff positions in hospitals to help make things work better. I've been in the Senate for 4 years and I've learned a lot. I've never had anything like this happen. Shoot a mile. 5 years ago, I was named the Minnesota Family Doctor of the Year in Minnesota. And I get this because a couple people complained, and I don't get to know who those people are. I don't know if they're routinely in a political camp, if they're activists. I've gone online and looked at what it takes to complete a complaint that the Board of Medical Practice has to follow up on. It's a one-page deal. You can say what you want. You could be a huge donor for the other party.
Twyla, my conclusion here is that if you're in the medical profession trying to tell the truth, as you are, there may be some consequences to pay. Am I right?
That's correct. The powers that be have a narrative here, and they don't want anybody to change that narrative. And physicians are some of the most trusted people in the country. And when physicians speak, most people assume that they've got some education and intelligence behind them and that there's a reason that they say things. They change the narrative. They get people to think outside of the fear narrative. They get people to think, well, maybe masks don't work, or maybe there aren't all of these deaths, which is absolutely true. Because he's correct. The CDC actually put out a publication, which I talked about in one of my videos and read from, which said that essentially, if you think it might be a COVID death, you should put it down as a COVID death. And he has said that as physicians, they're taught to be very precise about what they put on a death certificate. This is not something that you just do loosey-goosey. Mm-hmm. You actually figure it out, and that the CDC would come around. And the health department would then encourage you to just put COVID-19 as though it was really true. He's correct in bringing this up and bringing this to everybody's attention, that this is the wrong way. There could be all sorts of people that are called COVID-19 that aren't COVID-19. And you know, one of the very best statements about this comes from the head of the state health department in Illinois. It's at a press conference, and a child has died. And some reporter asks about whether this child has died from COVID-19. And she essentially says, and I am paraphrasing because I'm not sitting here with it, she essentially says, well, let me just educate you about what a COVID death definition is. Somebody has been diagnosed with cancer and they're terminally ill and we know they're going to die in 2 weeks, and then we find out that they have COVID. That's a COVID death. If we know that somebody has died from an alternative cause, but we find out that they have COVID, that's a COVID death. And that's what we're talking about here. And that's what he was warning people about. And that is not misinformation.
That was State Senator Scott Jensen in the state of Minnesota. That's where we're headquartering. And I happened to pick that little soundbite off the internet here this morning. Do you know how this case is going to turn out?
I don't know how this case is going to turn out, but I cannot imagine that he is going to get sanctioned, because the fact of the matter is he's got all the truth on his side. Okay. He has sent them something like a nearly 100-page document showing them all the evidence on his side. I think that they're just trying to shut him up.
Are they trying to shut you up?
Well, I think they might like to, but really all that I'm doing is providing information with sources. When you provide information with sources, it's very difficult to say that your sources are incorrect. And so in the video, I'm often just quoting people out of documents.
Well,
right?
Let's talk about how folks can access, particularly your videos, because they're short and they're very instructive. In 15 minutes, you say a whole lot. Is it mainly Facebook Live? That's where I happen to catch you.
So it's on Facebook, but we also putting them on YouTube, and then we have them on our website, because you never know what YouTube
exactly.
and Facebook are going to do. And so they're at patienttoolbox.org, which is a place that we help people when they feel like they're in a coercive situation in the exam room or at the hospital. Right now, the toolbox has four drawers: at the clinic, in the hospital, having a baby, and then our latest one is coronavirus. And so when you click on coronavirus at patienttoolbox.org, you can then have these things pop up, and one of them are COVID-19 update videos. And all of our videos are there. We're up to 23 so far. Yeah. We've had really good response.
They're excellent. They're brief and to the point. I learned a lot. I may have learned more through your videos than almost anything else, because they're just to the point. You said to me that we are being muzzled. What did you mean by that?
Well, muzzled, I was really looking at what the masks are doing.
Okay.
And the whole idea here is, they say it's for one thing, but I think it's being done for another thing.
Okay.
And so all sorts of people, you are not going to speak at great length if you have to have a mask on, because this is an impediment.
Okay.
This is a prohibition. So you're not going to speak at length. You're not going to breathe unnecessarily hard. And you know what? This is actually a double standard.
Yes.
So interestingly enough, in New Mexico, this shows you how faulty and fake this mandate really is, the need for it. In New Mexico, they say if you're going to exercise, you have to wear a mask. In Minnesota, they say it's one of the exemptions. You don't have to wear a mask if you exercise, right? Are we on the same page here? We're not. Everybody's doing whatever they want. They're just mandating the mask with their own stipulations. The big thing here for them is to get you into a mask, get you behind a mask, get you muzzled behind a mask, get you breathing less effectively
behind a mask. Talk to us for a minute or two. We've heard the term herd immunity, and neither you nor I like that term. So you use the term community immunity, which is just getting rid of the term herd here, get the animals out of the picture. What is community immunity? Is that something we're all striving for?
Yes and no, because different viruses have worked different ways. Most of the epidemiologists and virologists that I listen to, and I do encourage your listeners to go to unheard.com, and herd means like herd of cattle, so unheard.com, and they have Lockdown TV. They are talking to virologists, epidemiologists, physicians, all of these people who all around the country are watching this that most people are not, they never hear from,
sure.
Right? Community immunity really means that you get to about 60 to 70% of the population is infected, and so they run out of the susceptibles. So the virus runs out of the susceptibles. They keep running into somebody who's already had it, and then it dies because it can't transfer fast enough.
Okay.
They don't need 100%. Maybe they only need 60%. And then we don't actually know what immunity would mean with COVID-19. Because it's a coronavirus and because colds are a coronavirus, there are people who they think are probably not susceptible because they've had a cold, or they just get it really, you know, in a mild fashion. But the whole idea here is that it runs out. Someone said that SARS ran into the sea in China. It just kept moving and just ran into the sea, and then it was gone. I don't know that they had that many people, that high of a percent, but they ran into the sea, and then it didn't have anywhere to go. So it's like it moved in one direction. But that whole idea is that it runs out of susceptibles.
You're listening to Understanding the Times Radio. Twyla Brace in studio with me from Citizens Council on Health Freedom. Where do you think this is ultimately going? And I know you said to me, we've had MERS, we've had SARS, we've had H1N1. Every listener, I think, can remember what happened in 09, 2010. We had H1N1, I think it was. It was terrible. Obviously, no listener can remember what happened in 1918 when there were literally 50 million deaths from a virus, from some sort of a flu, but everybody can remember 09-10, and it was terrible back then. The sky wasn't falling back then, but the sky is falling now. Doesn't make sense to me. Where do you see this going? Just blossoming into a much bigger dilemma or petering out?
So I think we're now in a case of fact versus fiction, or a battle between fact versus fiction. We're in a battle between the narrative of government control and the freedom that we all have in a constitutional republic, and whether or not everybody is going to just sit there in the fear category and let the government take this kind of power. I look at the mask issue as being existential to freedom in this country, because if you agree that the government can do that to you, you will have to agree that the government can force you into vaccination. I wanted to just say one thing that Dr. Osterholm said.
Take your time.
Dr. Osterholm said, what if we start saying, because he's concerned about the mask mandate, what if we start saying, okay, all heavy people, we're going to do this to you because you're at risk of getting this disease more. And then he had one other example similar to that. And then he said, and then they'll say, well, I'm using the same basis for making those recommendations that I made for masks. In other words, if you accept that the government can, for health and safety, force you into a mask to cover up your personality, to dehumanize you, to take away your ability to speak and breathe freely, then you will have to accept that they can force you into vaccination. And then they can force you into staying home, and they can force you into this and that, and they can take your children away from you because they have said, you're not doing this for the good of your children. We, the government, speak about public health and safety, and whatever we say has to go. That's where I see this going if our side does not stand up and fight and say, actually, this mask is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It doesn't work. We can never make it legitimate. It cannot be legitimized. It has to be looked at the tool of control that it really is. This is all about freedom. This is not about health and safety. This is about freedom and whether we will win freedom at the end of the day or whether they will win control.
One more clip, Laura Ingram.
Given the enormity of the federal and state expenditures we're talking about here, it's amazing how little debate there's been about the risk to personal privacy. I'm telling you, there are always going to be plenty of reasons cited by government bureaucrats or unelected technocrats to justify taking your freedoms away. They'll cite scary things like gun violence, climate change, and now, of course, COVID, maybe the next virus. And they'll use our fear and maybe even skewed statistics or bad modeling to manipulate the public perception. They'll find experts who insist that the harm to personal privacy is minimal and that any trade-off is worth it. They'll promise their actions will be temporary and narrowly tailored. But invariably, these new programs, like what we saw after 9/11, will become permanent fixtures in American life and end up expanding far beyond their promised goals.
Twyla, your book, I have it in front of me. It's about a 420-page book, Big Brother in the Exam Room, The Dangerous Truth About Electronic Health Records. Give us a 2-minute summary of what's in the 430 pages practically. It's been endorsed by Dan Bongino, Dr. Jane Orient, all sorts of people, my friend, Dr. Linda Soli. Give us a summary.
I would say, first of all, I just want everybody to know that it's really well cited. So the 80-some pages are just the endnotes. That's right. And this is all about the electronic health record and about HIPAA, because HIPAA is not a privacy rule. It's considered a permissive data sharing rule. In 2009, the government imposed the electronic health records that you see in every exam room and in the hospital. They had to be used meaningfully, according to however the government said meaningfully is. And if they don't use it meaningfully, they can't have the money to help pay for them. And then it'll be fraud if they don't use it the way the government wants. Well, the government wants to use it to analyze people, to analyze doctors. They want to use it to control what happens in the exam room. Mm-hmm. They want to have all your information reported hither and yon. The CDC actually says, and I have the quote in there, that they envision that when all the data gets in the cloud, in other words, in all these electronic servers, that they will be able to go into the EHR and find data buried deep. Buried. That's their word, buried. So the plan here is the electronic health record is not about helping you and your doctor take care of you, because it has become a huge impediment. It is really about giving outsiders access to the data, which has become the gold mine of the 21st century. Right. There's so much money in data, right? But it's also a way to control your doctors and to take you and the doctor out of the decision-making process and put third parties in control. So we must never look at that electronic health. Electronic health records are okay if they're the ones that the doctors put, because they used to have them and they worked the way the doctors wanted them to work. But these are government electronic health records. This is a government record. This is not a private record.
Other than the bookstores, where can they get your book?
They can get it at BigBrotherInTheExamRoom.com.
Give it again.
BigBrotherInTheExamRoom.com. ccheffer.com.
We've got a lot of websites, folks. Twyla's website is cchfreedom.org. Obviously, you've got olivetreeviews.org. We're not carrying the book, but we've got lots of other products in our online store. Twyla, thank you for coming into the studio and giving us an hour today. We appreciate it so very much and all you're doing, sticking your neck out on our behalf. We appreciate it a lot.
Well, thank you so much, Jan, and I'm really glad to have been invited.
We just close with a couple of Bible verses. I think I'll give you three because we've talked about a lot of things, including fear. We know the Christian, really, fear is not something that motivates us. Fear is something that the Bible talks against over and over. 2 Timothy 1:7, for God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and love and a sound mind. Deuteronomy 31:8, it is the Lord who goes before you. He will be with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. Do not fear or be dismayed. And lastly, Psalm 55:22, cast your burden on the Lord and he will sustain you. He will never permit the righteous to be moved. I want to thank you for listening, and we will talk to you again next week.
You are the love song we'll sing forever.
If Olive Tree Ministries and Understanding the Times Radio has helped you grow in your faith and become a watchman on the wall, let us hear from you. Write us through our website, olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org. You can call us Central Time at 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. We get our mail when you write to Olive Tree Ministries and Jan Markell, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. That's Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. Until next week, know that God is not surprised by the tide of our times, and everything is falling into place.